My life is full of shoulds. I should do the laundry. I should send handwritten thank you notes. I should eat leafy greens every single day. I should quit eating sugar. The food ones are big in Seattle, I think. What are your shoulds? Do you have shoulds? No shoulds out there? Yeah, we've got shoulds. You should go to church. That's a real one, though. You should go to church. Yeah. A woman I know, Brenda, was struggling with her shoulds while her husband was dying. He was at home, lying in the bed they shared for 48 years, under the quilt she made with her daughter back when her daughter was still in pigtails. Sunlight washed the wooden floors with a golden, soft light as hospice nurses bustled in and out, keeping his pain absent. There was nothing to do but wait. But what should she be doing? Surely there was some task, some chore that she should be attending to. But no, the neighbors were bringing more casseroles than she could ever eat. So no cooking was needed. Her beloved Larry was under professional nursing care, so there was no need to fuss with his drinking glass or blankets anymore. He wasn't eating, so there was no need for her to spoon creamy soup up to his cracked lips. Now, getting to this point, she had been so busy. There were appointments with the neurologist and the primary care doctor, the acupuncturist, the oncologist. She spent time researching the best foods to feed people with chemotherapy so they're not nauseous, even though Larry didn't want to eat anything at all. She kept the kids up to date on the diagnosis. She fielded visits from well-meaning neighbors who tired her out. She went to the support group that the hospice folks kept insisting she go to. She responded to all the notes and cards. On the rare occasions when Larry was awake, she couldn't help but pester him. "What can I get you? What should I do to help?" But he just smiled and said, "Be with me. I love you. Be with me." Brenda practices Buddhism, but years of seated meditation and Dharma talks, learning to release the fear and sit in the moment, didn't help as much as she had hoped it would now that the moment was here. It seemed so important to do everything right, to grieve correctly, to be with Larry correctly. The shoulds were abundant, and they were so loud. One morning, Brenda was making pancakes for the assorted children and their spouses who had come into town to spend time with Larry and to support her. She reached into the cupboard for maple syrup, 100% pure maple syrup. And her mind flashed to a retreat she and Larry had taken years before the cancer had even begun. The three pure precepts. The three pure precepts are located in the Zen school of Buddhism. Although precepts are a common thread in all three schools, they're pretty universal. The three pure precepts weave a lot of complicated Buddhist thought into three easy to understand ideas, although easier to understand than to live by, certainly. The precepts are: do no evil, do good. Help other people to do good. The first one sounds like the easiest. Don't do evil. When did you actually ever do anything evil? I don't think that Lex Luthor is a part of this congregation. But by evil, the Buddhists mean something different. They mean more like, stop thinking you're the center of the whole universe. Eek. Well, that's easier said than done, at least for me. The seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism is that we try to honor the web of life of which we are a part. Not the web of life of which we are the whole dang thing, or the web of life for which we are the center and most important part, but the web of life of which we are a teeny, tiny strand. And this is what the first precept is all about, realizing our interdependence, remembering that every single person you meet and billions of people that you will never meet are all having the desires and the heartbreaks and the passions and the joys that are just as real and significant as your own. The first precept is really tough stuff. But as Brenda sat by Larry's bed, she started to get a hold of the edge of it. It wasn't about her. Sure, she was Larry's wife. She had a big role, but so did their kids, and Larry's work friends, and his golf buddies, and all their neighbors. Well, and heck, so did Larry. I mean, he was the one dying, after all. It wasn't about her. This wasn't a depressing thought for Brenda. It was immensely freeing because it disabled the shoulds. The shoulds were about Brenda. The shoulds put her in the center. She should sweep the floor or the neighbors would think that they were slobs. Well, the neighbors weren't thinking about the floor. The neighbors were thinking about their own problems. And if they were obsessing about her cleanliness, well, that was their own prerogative. That was their own weird stuff to deal with. Brenda realized she wasn't the star of the show. She didn't have to hold the whole world up by herself, and it was such a relief. After a few days at Larry's side, she became really aware of the interconnectedness of all life. Brenda started to intuitively grasp how she could help Larry and his visitors. She let Larry rest more. She stopped pestering him for ways to help. She sat by the bed and held his hand, singing the comforting old hymns from his Presbyterian childhood. Hymns they didn't agree with the theology of anymore, but the tunes were still so comforting. "How Great Thou Art," which he sang with his grandmother next to him in the pew as a child. "The Old Rugged Cross," which was sung at his baptism. Larry said he could practically hear the organ and smell the wood polish in the old church. Brenda told Larry one evening everything she remembered about the time when they were first together, how she tried to dry the flowers he gave her between the pages of a heavy old book, but she took them out to look at them so often that eventually they just disintegrated. How after their dates, she would run to the window by the front door and peek out so she could see the back of his head as he drove away, just to get one more glance. How happy she is now because their son looks just like him, and so she won't have to say goodbye to his cleft chin after he dies. Brenda got it, that cliched but really true statement that the best present she could give Larry was his presence, was her presence. And she gave that gift to all the other souls that were orbiting around that sickbed. She listened deeply to her children and their memories and all their fears about what life would be like when Dad was gone. She accepted casseroles and sympathy graciously from guests, even that 100th tuna noodle casserole that she knew no one was ever going to eat. Brenda had embodied the first two pure precepts. She did no evil by realizing that she was just a tiny strand in the interdependent web. She empathized with Larry and his guests so she could treat them how they needed to be treated at this difficult time. She freed all the shoulds from her mind. And the second precept, she did good. She did just what Larry had requested. "Be with me. I love you. Be with me." But what about that third pure precept? How could Brenda help other people to do good? This third precept has a lot of delightful room for interpretation. How can you help others to be able to do good? Some Buddhist practitioners help impoverished people in their community to meet their basic need for food and water and shelter so that those people can go find meaning in their lives so that they can live their dreams and start careers and meaningful work. Some utilize micro-lending organizations, and they lend funds to people in developing countries so that those people can develop their own sources for clean water. The trick is, with the help other people to do good, is you're not telling them, this is how you should develop clean water sources. You don't go in and do it for them, but you help them to be able to do it and to take pride in it and to own it. People in this congregation practice this precept when they work at the Food Lifeline Food Bank because they give food to parents who can then provide it for their children and have that satisfaction of knowing they're nourishing their family. I love this third precept because it's a fun combination of the first two. It's a reminder. It's not about you. You're enabling other people to do good. You're not helping yourself to do good. This isn't about doing good so you look generous or the neighbors think you are so charitable. This is about getting out of the way and helping other people to do good. This is about subtlety. But Brenda felt stuck. How could she help other people to do good? Her entire world was this room, this bedside, this wicker rocking chair where she sat holding Larry's hand during his transition out of this life. Who could she help from there? From the old wicker rocker? As she pondered, Larry entered the last week of his life. The hospice nurse said it would be any time, and Larry decided to only see Brenda and the kids. It was just too much to have friends and neighbors coming in and out. Brenda thought about all the calls she was getting from folks across the country who wished they could say goodbye, but lived out of town or weren't as mobile as they used to be. Brenda realized she could help others to do good by emailing them, requesting brief messages for Larry. She wrote, "Larry is making his final transition, and I am here holding him. If you have love that you wish to convey, please send it to me, and I will read it with love from your heart through my heart to him." Every single person she emailed responded within the day. And Brenda showered Larry in their loving words for hours and hours. Tears ran down his cheeks as he processed the impact he had had on decades of coworkers and bowling league buddies and the kids he coached in T-ball 20 years ago, the fellow Buddhists from their Sangha. The stories that these diverse souls told, they were stories that he had forgotten, a lifetime of hijinks and laughter and support. Larry told Brenda it was the best gift he had ever received, the gift of pure love, the reminder of souls he had touched on his passage through this life. Nearly 100 well wishes, nearly 100 fond goodbyes. "Now," Larry said, "now, I'm ready." And a few hours later, just after the sun set outside his uncurtained window, lying in the bed they shared for 48 years, under the quilt that she made with her daughter back when her daughter was in pigtails, he closed his eyes for the last time and died. A smile tugging at the corner of his lips. How can the three pure precepts add grace to your life? Cease from doing evil, alternately titled, "It's not about you." Forget the shoulds. Since you're not the center of the universe, you can let them go. Do good. Listen, put yourself in someone else's shoes. Give your presence, it's the best present. And finally, my very favorite, the third precept, help others to do good. Give souls in need a subtle assist on the way to that basket so they can do good in this world. It matters what we do in this life. Because our seventh principle, our interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part, always needs healing. Remember your small strand in the web. Do good. Help others to do good. Blessed be.